to this talk on Chaoszone TV. This talk, The Rise and Fall of Social Bot Research, will be presented from Florian Gallwitz. Nochmal für die deutschen Zuschauer und Hörer, dieser Talk wird übersetzt. Schaut nach der Übersetzung. Ich werde nun zurück nach Englisch wechseln. I will switch back to English now. This is a talk presented by Florian Gallwitz from the Nuremberg Institute of Technology, and he will talk about social bots. In recent years, we have all observed the phenomenon of social bots accompanying different media events, and also the media had like waves also showing those social bots activities in the social media. 4 years ago already, Michael Kreil found significant shortcomings in the research on social bots, and Florian will now deeper show us why the current research is flawed or even deeply flawed in this specific field. So have a lots of fun in the talk, The Rise and Fall of Social Bot Research.
Thank you very much for the introduction. So, unless you've been living under a rock somewhere in the desert, you've seen headlines like these. I just randomly selected a couple of headlines through Google News. So we have been told that bots on Twitter are amplifying conspiracy theories, or they are spreading disinformation before the election, or they, even half of the accounts tweeting about coronavirus are likely bots, and bots are a major source of climate disinformation, and there are hundreds of thousands of them, and they even interfere in Canadian politics and in British politics. And Donald Trump has millions of bots supporting him. And they are a danger to democracy, and they are poisoning democracy, and they are damaging democracy. They supported Boris Johnson, and they are spreading fake false claims about the bushfires in Australia, and they are even trying to influence elections in Germany, maybe. So this is you will find hundreds of headlines like these if you just search for the keyword bots in Google News. Behind many of these headlines, there is some academic research, most famously the paper by Ferrara and colleagues called The Rise of Social Bots, which inspired the title of this talk. And the papers that claim to prove some influence of social bots on the US presidential elections and the spread of fake news by social bots. And this is a paper, one of many papers by Philip Howard, who claimed that bots had interfered into the Brexit referendum. But there are many other issues that are allegedly influenced by social bots. So, for example, health communication, vaccine, the vaccine discussion. This is a paper from 2018, so before the COVID pandemic. This is a more recent paper. Both claim that bots are interfering the discourse about vaccines, but they're also interfering the discourse about climate and generally any low credibility content on Twitter is allegedly spread by social bots. So by the end of this talk, you will hopefully learn that the low credibility content is actually inside these papers. So what's a social bot? If we look at one of many slightly different definitions. This is one by Ferrara. So he's the one who basically created the social bot hype, so we have to believe him. So if we listen to him, social bots are automated accounts that use artificial intelligence to steer discussions and promote specific ideas or products on social media, such as Twitter and Facebook. To typical social media users browsing their feeds, social bots may go unnoticed as they are designed to resemble the appearance of human users, and they behave online in a manner similar to humans. So that's a pretty clear definition of what social bots are supposed to be. If you look at all definitions of social bots in academic papers, this is a pretty precise picture of what the general consensus on social bots is. So typically they are assumed to be political accounts influencing political discussions, and they have to be automated, and they are accounts with human fake profiles pretending to be humans and somehow behaving in a human fashion. So obviously at the intersection between political accounts and fake accounts, you would find human paid trolls, for example. So people who are paid to take part in political discussions. Also, you can easily find automated political accounts. So for example, the Fox News feed is political and it's somehow automated. So automatically newly published articles on the website, for example, get tweeted on Twitter. So there's some kind of automation. So this would be automated political accounts. And of course, there are also, you can at least suspect that a lot of automated accounts with fake human profiles are used with porn or crypto scams. So basically to scam individual users on Twitter. But social bots, they combine these three properties. That's generally the idea of social bots. And social bots are at least attributed with a they're somehow people believe that they are able to produce content on their own, so they're kind of somehow autonomous, and very often the words artificial intelligence are mentioned in context with social bots. So if Twitter is counted with crowded with social bots, where the hell is one? That's my starting point for my interest in social bots. So I felt kind of gaslighted. So media is telling me that there are millions of social bots on Twitter, and I've spent almost a decade on Twitter and I've never seen a social bot. So that's the point where that got me interested. I have a background in AI, in pattern recognition. I've been building conversational dialogue systems for many years, which we call chatbot today. And I've never really believed the idea that at the current state of the art, you could build political bots that could interfere in current political discussions. That seemed kind of strange and implausible to me. So if they exist, how do these things work? So I wanted to find one to take a look at the an actual social bot. And I started to search for an actual social bot in late 2018. So 3 years ago. So since then, I've studied dozens of scientific papers, media reports about alleged social bots. So basically, I read all newspaper articles, media reports about social bots that Google News could come up with in various different countries. And I've analyzed hundreds of Twitter accounts that had been accused of being social bots, for example, in newspapers where actual social bot accounts were named. And of course, I asked a number of social bot researchers for an example of an actual social bot. And I've performed experiments on using the Twitter API, which involved hundreds of thousands of accounts. Some of these experiments together with Michael Kreil, who was mentioned in the introduction, who has been working on this problem 1 or 2 years longer than me. So the total number of social bots I found until now using all these different approaches is zero. So I couldn't find a single social bot that fits the definition of Emilio Ferrara. So that seems kind of strange. So where does this apparent mismatch come from? In order to understand this, you have to take a look at the methodological basis of all these scientific papers. And basically, it boils down to two different methods. The first method is the so-called Oxford criterion, named after the University of Oxford, Philip Howard, who defined heavy automation as accounts that post at least 50 times a day. So basically, he counted the tweeting frequency of different accounts. Everybody who tweeted more than 50 times a day was defined, heavily automated, and referred to as a bot. So that seems kind of strange. And the second approach, and the more common approach nowadays, is an automated tool called a Botometer, which is you can use it. There's a public website where you can enter a Twitter account and press a button, and then you get a score somewhere between 0 and 5 or between 0 and 1, depending on the scale you use. And it basically, the researchers typically use the API. They feed long lists of Twitter accounts into Botometer. For each account, they receive a bot score. And then they use a threshold, typically 50%, so 0.5 on a scale of 0 to 1. And if the bot score is larger than 0.5, then they simply assume it's a bot. There are similar tools that basically work in the same manner, but Botometer is by far the most popular tool of this kind. So in both cases, no manual checks are performed whether the accounts identified using these rather crude methods are bots or not. And even more interestingly, the names or the user IDs of these alleged bots are not published. You won't find any bots in all these dozens of research papers. And if you ask the authors of these papers for the actual bots, they are routinely withheld. So they won't give you the data. They will give you some flimsy excuses about data protection laws and privacy, or they somehow accidentally deleted the data, or they didn't store the data, or whatever. So pretty much like if you ask the kind of the dog ate my homework type of excuses. Okay, let's take a slightly closer look at the way these researchers produce headlines. So that's basically a perfect recipe for creating a headline in the New York Times. So you decide which political issue you might be interested in. Really, you can come up with any topic you might be interested in. Let's say you're interested in gaming. So you want to create a headline about gaming and social bots in the New York Times. So what do? You look for gaming-related keywords on Twitter, and you identify accounts that tweet about gaming. Then you come up with a long list of user IDs, of Twitter accounts that tweet about gaming. Then you feed them into Botometer, use your threshold, 0.5, for example, and you get a list of bots and a list of humans. And then the New York Times will publish a headline: researchers, nearly half of accounts tweeting about gaming are bots. Okay, so now skeptical people like me might want to take a look at the actual bots to verify your claims. So obviously, it's more useful to hide this data. But journalists don't seem to be interested in the actual bots. They have never questioned the validity of these claims, even without looking at actual bots. So they will believe you, and they will publish this in the New York Times. So the first criterion that's used for this type of papers is the Oxford criterion, so the 50 tweets per day criterion. It's pretty easy to show that it's not very useful. So you find very large Twitter accounts, celebrities who tweet more than 50 tweets per day, like journalist Glenn Greenwald or Cory Doctorow, who's a blogger and author with a very large following, or Johannes Kahrs, for example, a German member of parliament who tweeted up to 300 tweets per day. Donald Trump himself tweeted more than 50 tweets per day on 6 days in 2020. At least in a very short period of time in 2020. So, political activists who have more time than presidents or members of parliaments obviously tweet a lot more. My favorite account on Twitter is actually a guy called Eric Luxack. He's a Canadian engineer and retired college instructor. He has been tweeting at rates above 300 tweets per day over a period of several months. And he's always ranting about liberals in Canada, and he hates Justin Trudeau. Another interesting experiment I performed was about the K-pop band BTS, extremely popular. And a German radio reporter made some derogatory remarks about the bands, and the K-pop band, the BTS fans were extremely angry about this, and they created more than 3 million. Tweets in a period of 4 days with the hashtag #Bayern3Racist. Bayern3 is the radio program involved, and they 500 of those accounts, 500 different accounts, each of them fulfilled the Oxford criterion, and the maximum was 344 tweets on average per day. And I looked at the top ranking accounts in this list, and none of them showed any signs of automation. Those were real people. They were tweeting pictures of themselves, and everything was consistent, coming from different countries. So those are real people, not bots. Another easy way of the second criterion that's often used for bot research is the Botometer. Botometer, you can try it. The link is given at the bottom of the page. And you can simply enter the name of a Twitter account, and the Botometer will return a score. So, for example, those are all bots, according to Botometer. So, for example, Tim Cook is a bot. The Pope is a bot. The new German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, is a bot. Former chess world champion Garry Kasparov is a bot. Auschwitz Museum is a bot. Joe Biden is a bot. The Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro is a bot. The very well-respected German virologist Christian Drosten is a bot, but also his counterpart, retired economist who is basically, who doesn't believe in the coronavirus. He is also a bot. So basically, if you just randomly enter account names, chances are very high that you will run into bots, according to Botometer. A similar analysis had been performed by Michael Kreil in 2018. He fed all the Twitter accounts of members of U.S. Congress into Botometer, and you can see that basically it behaves like a random number generator with a normal distribution, pretty much around the threshold that's usually used for discriminating between bots and humans. So if we want to use the same approach The social bot research is used for identifying bots. We can find interesting stuff. We could find UFOs, or we can find any kind of stuff we want to find. And I want to show how we could find unicorns. Let's say we want to find unicorns in Africa. So we would train a kind of photo trap for unicorns, and we want to deploy that in the Serengeti to find actual unicorns. So for training the unicorn, we have the same problem the social bot researchers have. We don't have actual unicorns to train our classifier on. So we would use unicorn-like animals, like a white horse, for example, or we would use toy unicorns as a training set for unicorns, and we would use some other animals like a cow, a pig, a cat, and a dog as non-unicorns, and then we would train our classifier on this data, and then we would move our trained classifier to Africa, and then we would find lots of unicorns. So, for example, in this case, the zebra would get a 75% unicorn score because it looks quite similar to this white horse, and also this white egret would get a very high unicorn score because it has this pointy beak and it's white, so it looks a lot like a unicorn. So now, if you want to convince people that you actually found lots of unicorns in Africa, some people might want to take a look at your pictures, but obviously that would be bad for your claim. So obviously you would want to hide the actual unicorns. You would simply rely on the results of your unicorn classifier. And people who complain, you would tell them, "Why, we have almost 100% recognition rate on our training data. So you believe us." That's exactly the way the bottom eater people argue. If we take a closer look at how this kind of classifiers work, well, basically, in statistical classifications or neural networks, or in the case of bottom eater, it's a random forest classifier. Any of these classifiers basically places each of the observations in a feature space. So the dimensions might be the whiteness and the pointiness of the animals. And so the unicorns and the non-unicorns, they form some kind of cluster in the feature space, ideally. And the training the classifier will create a class boundary that can perfectly discriminate between unicorns and non-unicorns on your training data or in very similar data. But in reality, if you now deploy your classifier to Africa or to the real world, you would find lots of unicorns and lots of non-unicorns depending on the class boundary chosen by the classifier. So it would still produce 100% recognition rate on your training data, but it seems far stretched to believe that this is actually a unicorn or this is a unicorn. So if you now remove the training data, you see that's basically you get some kind of unicorns, non-unicorns, depending on the class boundary you trained, but it seems outright ridiculous to believe that the animals labeled as unicorns will be actual unicorns, or even that the relative amount of the unicorns that result from this approach can serve as an approximation for the true prevalence of unicorns. But that's exactly the way those bot researchers argue. So there's another problem. If you think that what I told you so far is bad for social bot research, it's even worse. Now I have to explain you some fundamental ideas of pattern recognition. Let's first take a look at the approach. So the idea people use to come up with claims like 50% or 15% of the accounts are bots. They feed the list into the classifier, and they come up with 5 bots and 8 non-bots, for example. And now they calculate the relative amounts of bots, like 38.5% in this case. Now they claim that 38.5% of the accounts are bots, which is the so-called a priori probability for bots, or the prevalence of bots, or the prior probability. And the fun part now is that this probability is already part of the decision process that's used by the classifier. So for example, a random forest classifier like Bottometer will include this probability and will learn this probability based on the training data. So if the Bottometer people use 50% bots and 50% non-bots to train Bottometer, the classifier will have incorporated the information that 50% of the accounts are bots, and the optimal classifier with the lowest possible recognition rate, and this is what the training process is trying to achieve, will always adjust the threshold in a way that it will conform to this equation in order to produce good results on the training data or on similar. But this is circular reasoning. So to estimate the number of bots using this approach, you have to know it beforehand. So this is, it doesn't make sense. It's simply impossible to use a statistical classifier to determine the prevalence of bots or of unicorns or whatever. In reality, with Bottometer, there's typically a curve like this. So depending on the threshold you choose, you get a percentage of bots that are classified, a percentage of bots or a percentage of accounts classified as bots. So the standard threshold many people use is 50%. But if the accounts of bots is the number of bots is too high to be credible, the researchers typically choose a higher threshold, which would give you a lower percentage of bots. If you want more bots, you can choose a lower threshold. If you want to fewer bots, you can choose a higher threshold. But so basically, the results the researchers present are based on their guess of what the prevalence of bots might be in their scenario. So does not really make sense. So far, we have falsified the methodology used by social bot researchers using examples of human accounts, fed it into the different method, and also we have shown that it can't even work in theory. So there's one secret that's remaining. What do the bots look like that these researchers claim to find in their studies? So the accounts they prefer to hide when we ask them for the list of these accounts, and we've spent quite a lot of time trying to get behind this question and to find out what do the accounts look like they might find in their studies. So the first study we took a closer look at was about the German election in 2017. The authors claim that the share of social bots among the followers of seven German parties increased from 7.1% to 9.9% during the election campaigns. So basically, they claim that roughly 10% of 838,000 accounts following the largest German parties were social bots. So more than 80,000 accounts following German parties are social bots. That's interesting. So I asked the first author for examples of actual social bots, and he gave me four accounts which didn't remotely look like social bots, so that seemed kind of strange. And he also seemed to be fully aware that there are no social bots in his sample. So we tried to replicate this study a couple of months later. So we downloaded all the followers of the German parties, and we fed them through Bottometer. We used the same threshold these authors had used, and we, for the first time, we had a look at the actual bots that show up in this type of study. So now we found 260,000 bots. We took a random sample from these, in this case, 199 accounts. I spent a lot of time looking at each of those accounts very carefully. They are ranked by the bot score, so this is close to the basically the maximum value a botometer can produce. And those are all the accounts. You can check them if you want, if you believe any of those are bots. We couldn't find any bots. So for example, a dance cafe in Erfurt, this guy here, or we found a forester in southern Bavaria, or this guy complaining about the noise produced by motorbikes in Gelsenkirchen. And it took me a quick Google search, and I could find out exactly at this day there was a motorcycle event in Gelsenkirchen at the amphitheater in Gelsenkirchen. So they, those are real people with real ears complaining about real noise. Many of these accounts are very inactive, so basically the opposite of what social bot researchers make you believe about the about the properties of social bots. So we couldn't find a single social bot in this list. Some more of these accounts. So for example, probably Kyra Müller, probably she asked Microsoft for help, and the one and only tweet she produced with this account, and it resulted in a bot score close to 5, like 4.564, so close to the maximum. Awesome. A blogger, a doctor, a politician, former regional chairman of the political party Die Linke, she got a bot score of 4.4 and a scale of 0.5. No bots. The second study we looked at closely claimed that they found a very large a number of social bots in spreading vaccine critical information, kind of 200,000 social bots. And I asked Adam Dunn, the first author, for the list of the for bots for of his bots, and he actually gave me the list. So that for the very first time, we had the precise list that was used to produce this kind of paper. And also, again, we sampled a random sample of 121 in this case of the 200,000 bots. And I took a very close look at these 121 accounts, and we could not find a single social bot. And those are just 9 of the 120 accounts I analyzed. You can see those are doctors. This is a very high-ranking doctor at the World Health Organization, a medical student from Rwanda, a professor from Texas. He's working at a medical technology company in Nigeria, a medical intern from Saudi Arabia, a health professional from California, I think, a postdoctoral researcher and on RNA viruses, data operator, IT professional from India. So from people from across the world, many tweeting under the real name, many with impressive professional credentials. And they simply, these social bot researchers simply claim those are all bots. So this seems kind of strange. So if we take a closer look at this list of 121 accounts, a lot, you can check the accounts, they're all in our paper. So, for example, the World Association for Medical Law was rated a bot, or this pastor from Boston was rated a bot, but none of them seem remotely automated. This is one of my favorites, Taylor Timothy, tweets by a girl called Taylor, who is seriously in love with a guy called Timothy Moss, with whom she is engaged. So those are two of her tweets. And the bot score is 4.39, for close to maximum. Or this Laura James, she even tweeted lots of pictures of herself. She tweets a lot about UNICEF. She was rated a bot. Okay, so in this year, two other papers came out, two other interesting papers. Okay. Okay, so there were some problems with the slides, but problems seem to be solved. So in 2021, two papers were published where researchers used Botometer, and they actually checked the list of bots they got, very much similar to what we actually did. And in this paper, they took a very close look at 500 accounts, and they fed them into Botometer, and they also manually checked them if they could be automated or if they looked automated. And it turned out that Botometer labeled roughly 6% of the users as social bots, but none of them account looked like a remotely automated, so they simply ignored the Botometer labels as rubbish. And another paper, very similar, it was just the preprint was published a few weeks ago, and they also use Botometer. They used their standard threshold of 0.5, and so 86 accounts were labeled bots, but actually none of these was a social bot. Only one of them was automated. It automatically shared article from an external personal blog, so that doesn't make it a social bot. It might have been automated. So we ignore the people. Basically, turned out that the Botometer scores are absolutely unreliable and have nothing to do with reality. So now we've seen, so basically we can ignore the existing social bot research based on the Oxford criterion, or we can ignore the research based on Botometer. But there are some other methods being used where people claim to find social bots. So this is a headline from the Times of London: army of Twitter bots follow top politicians such as Nicola Sturgeon and a few others. When you ask the people how do you know it's bots, that is actually this guy. Sorry. Okay, still some problems with the slide stream, but hopefully I think I won't change anything now. Okay, so this guy explained on Twitter how it worked. We downloaded the latest 1K followers of 7 politicians and checked numbers of users with exactly 8 digits in usernames. So these guys assume that bots are usernames with 8 digits, like Mike26481564. So they assume that's a bot. Many people believe this, but it's actually complete bullshit, because names like these are automatically assigned to newly created accounts by Twitter, at least since 2017. So you can't, if you just create a new account with a common name, you will automatically get assigned a name with these 8 digits attached. So if you're familiar with Twitter, you have a possibility to change the name of your Twitter account, but most people aren't aware of this feature, so they simply they look like bots for the rest of their days on Twitter. What about accounts posting the same stuff? Very often claims are made about bots with screenshot like the one on like this. So different accounts posting more or less the same message. And typically, those are so-called copypastas, and where people ironically make fun of some tweet they don't like by posting it over and over again. Sometimes post it over and over again unironically, or different accounts post the same message. It's pretty hard to understand if you're not familiar with the meme culture on Twitter. This guy, for example, all these accounts are on the same side of the discussion, but he doesn't get the joke. So he believes those are bots. Actually, those are his friends in this political issue. And then you find reports like the one that's published yearly by the Computational Propaganda Research Project in the Oxford Internet Institute, and they give you colorful lists of countries where bots had been identified in the year. Obviously, the whole list, if you look, take a close look, is not based on actual bots, but it's based on news reports about actual bots. So that's a kind of a process that will continue to go on forever, because newspapers will report about this report, and the reports about the report will be will lead to further bots in or bot claims in the newspapers. So there's a very nice claim by a German journalist in a very different context that describes what's going on. If I found an institute to combat public health hazards caused by hedgehog bites and provide this institute with staff positions, then I will get a study every year warning about the growing dangers posed by aggressive hedgehogs. Anything else would be rather stupid on the part of the institute's staff. So that's pretty much describes what's going on with all these research institutes involved in investigating social bots. So to conclude, social bot research is fundamentally based on the misclassification of human users as social bots. Malicious interactive social bots don't seem to exist at all. After years of studying the output of social bot research, we have yet to see a single credible example of a social bot. And some of the researchers involved in this type of research violate basic academic standards, though they make claims that are not supported by data, and they withhold data which would allow us to verify their claims. And the public has been misled over the non-issue of social bots for years. So Michael Kreil and me, we wrote all this down in a paper. The name is The Rise and Fall of Social Bot Research. You can download it at the link on the slide, and it has all the lists of bots in the appendix, so you can take a closer look and try to find social bots if you in those lists if you like. Thank you very much for your attention.
Well, thanks so much, Florian, and for your talk. And it seems to me that indeed the field of social bot research is in a very problematic state. To me, it also seems, just for the sake of realistic thinking and discussion, the work you do and Michael Kreil is doing is really important for all of us. So we, and maybe you or all the scientists, need to provide a clear base for discussion and media coverage such that those topics are actually kind of talked about reasonably. So we collected some questions from our audience, and maybe I'll go through these questions one by one. The first one would be, yes, you talked about those social bots and like what is a bot and what is not a bot, but shouldn't the question rather be about the effect of such accounts rather than whether they are click workers, people with too much time in their hands, paid influencers, or automated accounts? So saying being a bot or being acting in kind of those political ways or acting like a bot, isn't that actually the same, or like the effect is important? Would you agree with that?
Well, we are not the ones who made the claims that these automated bots exist. So first of all, before we talk about the effects of stuff, we would have to first have to talk, do they exist at all? Though many social bot research could say, hey, but Caleb, let's talk about the effects, not about the existence. But first of all, we have got to rid of this belief, which I think it's a conspiracy theory. It's a fairy tale that these social bots, these automated accounts exist. And many people actually believe it. And typically, when people claim, you're a bot. You're a bot. This is your bot meter score. No, I'm not a bot, but you're a bot. So these discussions on Twitter keep going on, and they are based on this belief and this ridiculous conspiracy theory. So First of all, Michael and me, we're trying to get let people have a realistic view of what's actually going on Twitter. Now, the question whether accounts are maybe paid by some malicious actors influence discussions is a very different question. So we have been looking at automation. I'm a computer scientist, and so my I'm not the right person to analyze the motivations why people might be tweeting on Twitter a lot, but my impression is that the very active accounts on Twitter, like the Canadian account I mentioned in the talk, Eric Lutzek, I don't believe he's a paid actor. He's a retired professor and engineer. He has a lot of money. He's certainly not paid for being political, very active on Twitter. He is acting out of intrinsic motivation. Same holds for all these 500 accounts that tweeted hundreds of times about the K-pop band. They are not paid actors. They are people who are angry about stuff, or people who are really trying to change things by being very active on Twitter. So my general impression is that people have a tendency of overestimating the problem of malicious fake accounts. People, the default assumption should be actually those are real people with real intrinsic motivation.
Another question we have is, in your slides you had this circular reasoning example, or yeah, maybe this kind of fundamental flaw of circular reasoning. Yeah. And the question would be from this person, is it maybe like circular reasoning, maybe not rather resonance, which would be a valid method to get a result, kind of that the results actually resonate with their with the real world, such that in the end you would kind of confirm that there is something resonating with your findings. It's a bit hard to ask this question, but maybe okay, you got it.
I think I believe I get where the question is going at. So maybe the idea would be to use this method, you would have to have a guess for the prior probability of bots. So you could use this iteratively and hopefully end at the real value. But actually, I believe it will certainly either it will explode and go to 100%, or it will go to zero. From all my, let's say, 25 experience in pattern recognition, I don't think that this approach is remotely capable of estimating the real probability by using it iteratively or something like that. So no, that I don't think that will work. The interesting part about this equation is any kind of classifier uses it, so even humans use it. So if my task is to label bots or whatever in a list of accounts, and I have some expectation of the real prevalence of bots, I will include this information. So so basically the problem is, if we don't know the prevalence, how can we even estimate it? And the only way to do it would be if these two posterior probabilities, which basically tell us how much do these features, so for example, the tweeting rate, look like a bot. And if these two distributions are very different, so for example, if bots tweet 10,000 times a day and humans only tweet 10 times a day, then we can keep these two apart. And these two probabilities, which we don't know, are very unimportant. But if these two distributions are somewhat similar, we're trying to estimate if it's a man or a woman based on the height, of course, if somebody is 1.75 meters, it can be a male or a female, it's very hard to discriminate. So these distributions overlap, and if these distributions overlap, we simply cannot count male and females without having without knowing in advance which are the two classes what the distribution is. So this approach, even if we there's no way to make it to iteratively use it unless we have a very clear identifier for humans and bots. So for example, if each of the bots has a label that says it's a bot, then yeah, we can discriminate the two classes.
Mm-hmm. Another question that is similar maybe to the effect question that we had in the beginning. Are you not worried that your research will be abused by those employing rooms full of humans to do bot-like posting, to just claim there are no problems at all and just giving this as an excuse, saying like, ah, look at those researchers, they claim there are no bots at all, so like what we do is good work or something like that?
Well, first of all, I'm a researcher, so I'm not interested in what people might make of the results I have. So I'm not trying to produce results that might be useful for somebody, or I'm not afraid of producing results that might come handy for parties in political discussions. The whole bot research very often involves very polarized political discussions. So sometimes people like me because I tell the right-wing people they're not bots, they're real people. And then in the next discussion, I tell the left-wing people they're not bots and they like me because I tell them they're not bots. So at the moment I start to think about the effects that some people might like about research, this would be, I would no longer be a scientist. But obviously, we're not talking about people getting paid for tweeting. So obviously, we are only interested in the claims about social bots. So the automated accounts interfering in political discussions using fake profiles. So the paid trolls, I don't claim they don't exist. I know they exist, especially in Venezuela, for example, or in Mexico, or in Russia. They're very valid, very credible reports about paid trolls, even insider reports by people who've been working in this kind of setups. So I'm certainly not claiming that there are no humans trying to interfere in political discussions.
Yeah. Maybe a follow-up from another attendee. How can we incentivize this replication work for those studies you've shown and you kind of tried to replicate as well, or at least got some information out within the scientific community for this field? Is there kind of something that the general audience can do, or maybe something that researchers need to do in order to put more focus on replication in this field, which seems to be a bit flawed and needs a lot of replication, it seems?
Well, it's. I think the replication issue is a big issue in all scientific fields, even in computer science. A lot of the research, for example, new topologies designed for neural networks, which work in certain setups in certain, but it no longer work in slightly different setups. So replication is a big issue in all scientific fields, but I think it's a very huge issue in social sciences. So I'm a computer scientist. I come from a technical field. We're used to very strict standards, so we're used. Nobody would dare to publish something without being ready to publish the raw data as well. So the idea of publishing results without being able to hand out the raw data is a huge, it's basically scientific misconduct in our field. So in social sciences, obviously, people seem to be a little bit more relaxed about reality and about truthfulness and about everything. I have a feeling there's a kind of cultural mismatch. It turns out that a lot of studies in social sciences are not replicable, and the problem seems to be extremely prevalent in social sciences. Yes.
Maybe last question. A couple of people asked the variations on the same question. In your opinion, is the lack of evidence for social bots sufficient to prove that social bots do not exist or not in any meaningful amounts? I mean, like, that we didn't find them doesn't mean they don't exist. I mean, we can build one for a proof that they exist. But do you think that kind of the lack of evidence is proof for maybe that they do not exist at all, or not exist in a large quantity?
Well, basically, the interesting, maybe you're familiar with Russell's teapot. He used the idea of a teapot flying around the sun in an orbit beyond Mars, and claiming that the teapot was flying around the sun in orbit around Mars is hard to disprove. So you cannot, you can take a very close look at the orbit and you will still not be able to disprove that that a teapot is flying around Mars. And obviously we have the technology to send a teapot in an orbit around Mars. And if people claim that a teapot might be orbiting Mars, it's very hard. Yeah, we can build rockets, we can build teapots, we can send them in orbit around Mars, and it would be very hard to disprove these claims. Mm-hmm. It's very much like social bots. Now, I believe it's very unlikely that somebody has already launched a rocket with a teapot to orbit Mars, and also believe it's pretty unlikely that people would try to build automated political social bots simply based on my understanding of the technology. So building chatbots is extremely cumbersome, it's expensive, and the results are really, really bad. So if you've ever interacted with a real social, a real chatbot, you know that those bots are very limited at the current state of the art. They can't even handle negation. So if you tell Siri, do not switch on the light, it will switch on the light. So even simple stuff like negation are still beyond what natural language processing can do at the current state of the art. So the idea that of rapidly coming up with a chatbot-like a system that can interfere in current political discussions, which are usually only going on for a couple of days on Twitter, and then you would have to buy a new one for the next discussion, or you have to program a new one, it seems very, very beyond what's possible from a technological perspective. So I'm pretty sure these kind of bots do not exist, but of course I cannot prove it.
All right, thanks. I think we got some more questions, but we cannot really fit them into this slot. Again, thanks so much, Florian. Keep up the discussion and also keep up your work. And after this talk, we will continue here on Chaos Zone TV with a talk from Big Alex about software engineering, I guess. And we will see you soon after a short break. Thank you.
Thank you.